How long have you had the Adam's apple neck on your above the necropotence?
Adam's apple neck? What
I don't
could
know
this
that
mean?
I ever noticed the above necropotence.
This is a neck tattoo. So when I was young, I was like, I got a neck tattoo. And they're like, what? It's funny, right?
That's really good. I've never seen that one before.
We'll film it later for the podcast.
Yeah, we'll film it later. I don't think I've ever really taken note of that before. That's really good. Are you ever going to tattoo your neck? It sounds like an insanely painful experience.
I thought about it a lot. I want to. I want to do my hands before my neck. I don't know, though. I haven't really... Realistically, it's like not, for some reason, as much of a necessity to me. Maybe the side of my neck, but...
That sounds way less painful.
Yeah.
I feel like,
yeah, that would be a lot. Are we ready?
Yeah, sure.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 with the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we're talking about Edge of Eternity in CEDH, new Magic the Gathering set. We're in space this time. Tezzeret's there, a couple of other friends. We're going to be talking about how some of these space cards might relate to CEDH. We have a list of like 20, 25. Realistically, most of them are not going to see a ton of CEDH play, but some of them will be considerations and some of them will be interesting in certain decks. And we're going to talk about that.
This is definitely a fun list of cards to talk about. I'll tell you that, Dylan. Yeah.
As far as normally with these lists, I think out of each set, we get like realistically 1 to 3 actually good CEDH cards. I think that might be true for this set. And then a whole bunch of close maybes in some decks in certain situations.
And I think that there's a couple of other cards that are like one-offs for decks too, that I think that certain decks will be extremely happy to have and like no other deck in the format will. So I'm excited to showcase these. Now, are we going to give these a rating? I know that we're not necessarily
always
trying to like always rank them against each other.
I think we should rank them against each other. That's how it could, because we're making the top 10 cards of Edge of Eternities for CDH, you know,
right,
or something
like
that.
Do you want to do me a favor? Do you want to keep track of the scores then? I think that would be helpful for me.
Now I have to get up. My focus is going to all mess up. This.
Hi. Right, get comfy.
This, is that right now? Now that we spent fucking 10 minutes getting ready for the podcast.
But the podcast has started, though, at least.
At least we've started.
All right.
We're back. We're back.
All right. So thank you for being willing to keep track of the
Space
scores
list
today. Yeah. I think we're going to go in Wooburg order this time.
I think that makes the most sense. Yeah, start with the white cards.
And I've also arranged them by price order.
Oh, okay. So we're starting at the cheapest and going to the most expensive?
I think, because our first card is an uncommon.
Okay.
Actually, I kind of hate this, because now our first card is a card that we talked about last week.
Oh, it's okay. It's all right. We'll start with something familiar.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to start out with something familiar, and this is Starfield Shepherd. So Starfield Shepherd, for those who weren't tuned in last week, is 3 and 2 white for a 3/2 angel that has flying, and when it enters, lets you search your library for a basic planes or creature with mana value 1 or less, reveal it, and put it into your hand and then shuffle. But it also has a warp cost of 1 and a white, which means that you can cast it from your hand for its warp cost. Notably, you can't do this effect off of like a Jeskha's Well. But you can exile this creature at the beginning of the next end step then, and then you can cast it from exile later. So it just basically gives you a 2-mana version of the enter the battlefield trigger, while also letting your Gaia's Cradle still tap for the additional green for that turn after this has already come into play for 2 mana.
And when you play it the following turn, you play it for the full 5 mana. You can't warp it again, right?
That's correct. Yeah, because you can only warp it from your hand. That's why you can't just infinitely warp this on every one of your turns.
Like you mentioned, we did talk about this in a previous podcast, but in case you didn't see that one, the main things that I like about this one is obviously it's a tutor. It's an efficiently costed tutor. It's 2 mana to find you a lot of things that white decks are going to be looking for. Stuff like Esper Sentinel, stuff like Lion's Eye Diamond, stuff like Walking Ballista. If you can find both a combo piece and advantage in some way, I think this card is going to be really interesting in your deck, especially if you're not in black cards.
This one doesn't find Lion's Eye Diamond.
What is it?
It only finds creatures.
Oh, only finds creatures.
It's only creatures.
Only creatures,
yeah.
1 or less. Okay, okay. So it doesn't find Lion's Eye Diamond.
So
right,
it's like
sorry.
If you want another Eladamri's Call in your deck,
yes,
that's at
okay.
Sorcery speed, but they can also have like the additional upside. I think like that's why you play this card next to Eladamri's Call in
okay.
A lot of those like non-black decks that are still looking for ways to get their creatures that they really want, is that like this gives you way great late game potential. crystal, you can't warp it and then cast it again in the same turn. It doesn't go back to exile until the end step. So you can't chain this into two tutors the same turn.
But it can be an extra body. Like, it can go find the Esper Sentinel, and then you can cast the Esper Sentinel. And then for this turn right now, like you mentioned, like Gaia's Cradle will tap for two now.
Yeah, exactly. I think there was a lot of decks that like are struggling to get three white pips for Ranger Captain Aveos to also be able to play Esper Sentinel the same turn that you follow it up. And a lot of times when you telegraph that there's an Esper Sentinel, everyone's throwing out all of their artifacts that they have.
Sure, yeah. Give them a little more of a reason.
Yeah, so like this is a little bit more of like a turbo way to get that effect, or a turbo way to get Walking Ballista. But I think if you're those two cards in particular,
you have to be looking, I think, for those two, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because there is Elodomri's Call that's also like kind of competing with the space a little bit. But at the same time, I think this does have enough upside in those decks that play those two cards that this is going to be a CEDH playable card.
Honestly, the Elodomri's thing makes me think that like if you're in green, you have so many tutors already. Do you need to stretch for this? If you're in black, similar situation, you have a good chunk of tutors. So this might be a card that you really are looking in sans green, sans black decks. If you're in kind of a Bant area where you like, or not Bant, I guess, you're in like a Jeskai area, then maybe this is a little bit better.
Because Jeskai already doesn't have many tutors. And I feel like more ways to find card advantage in a color combination that is not known for card advantage in the command zone,
right? Yeah,
I think is really important. Plus, those decks can also use it to find like Mockingbird and Ragavan, which also have like other really nice uses for this too. So yeah, I kind of don't hate this in some Jeskai builds. I think
the Mockingbird thing is kind of perfect, and I like the range of like you can find Ragavan for mana advantage, Esper Sentinel for card advantage, Walking Ballista for combo, and Mockingbird for anything. So yeah, I like it a lot in Jeskai decks.
It kind of does a lot. Okay, yeah. So what are we going to give this card?
5 is a CDH staple that goes in every single deck, and 4 is a very good CDH card that will go in a lot of decks, and 3 is a CDH card that goes in like one deck or like really one small archetype.
I would say one or two strategies.
Which
could be one deck. Like Magda is a strategy, but like also like Seedborn Muse card advantage engine in the command zone strategy is
that
like
can
it's,
be in
its
the
own
threes. Yeah. A 2 is a card that is good in one deck, but really only one deck, and it's only like a specific type of, it's a dwarf. It's a one mana dwarf. That's a 2. Really good in Magda, but nowhere else. Something like that. We change what these ratings are a little bit each time,
I think.
But
this is what they
are.
But
this is what they are right now. This is what I'm feeling right now. And then a 1 is like basically not a CDH card, but if you want to try it in your fringe deck, sure, you know.
We just don't want to try them in our decks.
But I just don't want to try. And then 0 is not a CDH card.
Yes, exactly. So there's 6 things that it can be.
Perfect. So that, for me, that means that this is kind of around a 3, where I think this is going to be a decent card in a couple of strategies. I'm going to say a 3.1.
I'm going to say a 2.5.
Great. So now we have to do the math, and then I'm going to guess that that's around a 2.7 in between.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
I'm not going to double-check that because I only have so many hands. One for the microphone, one for the pen. Where does the calculator go?
I have the phone and the microphone.
Yeah, and if you switch from the app to the calculator, you might not be able to find the app again.
And it's not guaranteed that my math has been correct anyway, so.
That's fair. Let's just eyeball it. 2.7 for the Starfish Shepherd.
I have a question. Yeah. Should I hold the microphone closer down here the way that you are?
How are you holding it?
I was holding it, like, way up here.
I feel like I have no control up here.
Like a Bob Barker thing.
Yeah, and then this is nice, but I feel like I have no control. It's going to be easing in and out. You know what
Whoa!
I mean?
Whoa,
where's it going? So I like it. I like it choked up. I like choking up on the shaft.
I'll choke it up a little bit. Yeah. The next card is Esteli Reclaimer. This is 3 and 2 white. Another angel. Another 5-mana angel.
Can you say the name of the card again?
Esteli.
Esteli.
Esteli. I think it's Italian. 3 and 2 white for a 5/4 angel warrior with flying. When this creature enters, return target non-creature, non-land permanent card with mana value X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast this creature. And you can also warp it for 2 and 1 white.
This is, honestly, now that I'm thinking about it now, it's not good, right?
It's a really bad Savine's Reclamation.
Nothing from the graveyard. It's just 3 mana to bring an Underworld Breach back.
But like with Gifts Ungiven in the format now, is there a scenario where you want a second version of Savine's Reclamation?
I think this is my fault. I think I put this card on incorrectly. I think there's like 1 mana cards that reanimate.
I put this card
on
too. Yeah, because I was like, this seems okay.
Yeah, I put this on thinking that you didn't put it on, but you did put it on. I'm going to be honest. I don't really know that I love this card, but it brings back Underworld Breach. That's what it does do. It brings back Rhystic Study. That's what it can do. It can be very good in a grindy situation if you want to bring stuff back.
Brings back Food Chain.
Sure. Puts it into play, right? That's nice. So it's a better rate than like something like Eternal Witness or something? Somewhere around a 2, I think, is going to be it for me.
Rhystic Study, though, too. Like, your Rhystic Study and Mystic Remora?
Yeah, but I think I like something like Mirror Maid as something that's like almost a Rhystic Study, but not better, because like...
Then your Rhystic Study doesn't have to be in the graveyard.
You don't have to rely on your Rhystic Study being in the graveyard. You can rely on somebody else having one, which is feels more likely. Because honestly, Rhystic Study, there's a lot of situations where you kind of can't counter it. It's going to have to stay around. You can't really destroy it. There are some situations where a player is ready to win, so they remove it then. But I don't know. It's rarer that it's in the graveyard for me. So yeah, I'm going to give this one a 2.
I'm also going to give it a 2 because there is a better version of it. You can't cast this from the graveyard, I guess, too.
I guess we also said that. I think it's maybe even lower than a 2 because I said a 2 was like that goes in like one deck. I don't even know what deck this goes in.
What deck this goes in,
I'm going to give this a 1.1 because it might be a card that I'm not seeing.
All right, I'll give it a 1.3.
So it's a 1.2. That sounds more fair.
Because the other thing that I'm not realizing is that, like, the reason why Savine's Reclamation is good is because if they give you Lion's Eye Diamond, you can still Savine's Reclamation from your graveyard.
Yeah.
But if this is part of your pile...
This is missing the core part that makes Savine's Reclamation interesting, which is the flashback.
Great. So far we talked about a card that we already talked about on the show and a bad card.
And we spent 8 minutes trying to figure out the setup. So we're 20 minutes in, we've been filming already.
Jesus Christ.
Hopefully on the podcast, only 2 minutes have
passed.
They
won't know that, but I will still feel it in the editing room.
What's the third card we're talking about today?
Patrolling Peacemaker is 2 and a white for an artifact creature robot soldier that's a 0/0, but it enters the battlefield with 2+1/+1 counters on it. This is from the commander set specifically. And when an opponent commits a crime, proliferate.
This is a 3 mana?
This is 3 mana.
So this feels close in certain decks, like... The Taim players are going to be pissed at me. Is this a Taim card? Is this something where you passively are making more counters on your things every time something is countered or targeted?
Because you don't have to do anything, and then every time your opponent does something, you get like 5 counters.
Right, it's 3 mana, so you can get it back with Taim. It comes in with 2+1/+1 counters, which Taim is interested in that too.
Anything that says when your opponent does something, you get advantage is something that we've been looking at.
Yeah.
And something else that will come up with proliferate that we'll find is like other people have Mystic Remoras in play, and if it's been around for a turn, you can give it more counters and like kind of make it inevitable to go away for that player's next turn.
That's certainly true. I mean, 3 mana is obviously 3 mana is a lot. That's a lot of mana for CDH, so I'm not sure, and we're notoriously wrong about what cards go in Taim, but I think that if there is a deck that can utilize counters and wants to proliferate a lot, I think this is a card that you can consider for CDH.
Or honestly, another commander that we'll talk about a little bit later today too.
Passive advantage is good. This is passive advantage if you can use that passive advantage. I'm going to give it like a 1.8 because I don't exactly know that it goes in Taim. I think it might go in a strategy, but I'm not sure.
I'm going to give it a 2 because I think it is like one strategy that it goes in, and that is a counters strategy. Yeah.
1.9, it'll average out for that card.
Cool, okay. And now our next card, our last white card here is Exalted Sunborn. This is another fucking angel that's 3 and 2 white for a 4/5 with flying and lifelink, and it says if one or more tokens would be created under your control, twice that many of those tokens are created instead. Twice that many of those tokens
are
created
instead.
Not an additional,
twice.
Exactly. That's gnarly.
That's something.
And it's only cool because you can warp it for 1 and a white.
So normally this is not an effect that we see in CDH, but we have not seen this effect for only 2 mana. Now warp means it goes away at the end, so it can't just like give you a ton of like Smothering Tithe advantage over the course of turns or something like that. But what it can do is make your Lotho that triggers for it, make you not triggers for it. You have to.
What I would do is it's something that you do after Lotho's in play. So you pass the turn, get some treasures off of Lotho, and then going into your next turn before you make a ton of other treasures, this is the first thing that you do.
You warp this, then you cast a Soul Ring, and then off Lotho you get 2 treasures and it pays for the warped version of this. And then any other tokens you make are just like free after that.
Which works well if you, especially like the treasure tokens, which is what makes it nuts. Like Marnius in particular, I think is where this home is going to be really good because cards like Grim Hireling, Rev, like all these other cards. And then you go to the end of your turn and then the 1 mana Ocelot Pride doubles all of the tokens that you've already made that turn. So like the synergy that this ends up putting together with the other cards in Marnius specifically, I think might make this an actual token doubler that deck plays.
Yeah, I think there is a world where this is going to often feel kind of like a Cabal ritual with it'll cost you 2 mana, but over the course of the other actions you can take, it'll make you somewhere between 3 and 5 mana on that turn. If you're doing a bunch of treasure stuff, I think that's what you could hope to expect from something like this, but Marnius, I don't know. Marnius has been getting a lot of toys recently. There's been a lot of cards where we go, well, this feels like it could go in Marnius too. So I gotta imagine the slots have got to be getting tight, but this is the cheapest that we've ever seen a token doubler being able to be cast for that 2 mana. So I think that's just worth looking at.
I think you really only need that one turn, which is why I think that I'm also looking at this. Like, I'm not sad that it's going to go away, because all of the advantage that I can get off of it will help me even then cast it later to be a permanent token doubler if I want it to be.
Najeela makes a bunch of tokens.
Is this a good Najeela card?
It's not a warrior, is it? It's an angel only?
No, it has two types. What? It has two types. It's an angel wizard.
Damn it.
That's so close.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of other commanders that want to like make a bunch of tokens in a turn or something like that. And making like double tokens is so much more than making +1 tokens, right? If your thing makes 3 tokens, now it makes 6 tokens. Holy shit, that's gonna like, it's exponential growth type of situation.
It has to be like your whole thing. Like the first deck that comes to mind for me is Lannis. But that's a Civic deck that can't play this.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So big bummer.
Not good.
Now, What else?
I'm not sure. If you're looking for token doublers, this is something to look at.
This is on the list, but it's definitely a 2 because it's going to go in Marnius for sure.
I think Marnius players should consider it. I don't know that it is a for sure fire thing in Marnius, but to me it feels like it is. It might feel Windmoor-ish. This itself doesn't make tokens, and you kind of want everything to make tokens, whereas this needs to be with one of the other token makers, maybe.
I can see that.
I'm going to give it a 1.9 because I'm not sure.
All right. I think you've swayed me. 1.75 is what I'll give it then.
So then the average between 1.75 and 1.9 is probably like 1.83. 1. That feels right.
1.825, I think, is what it is.
1.825 is what that felt like.
That might
like.
Be the most mathematical thing that we do all day.
Perfect. It's almost like you speak for professionally.
Well, you know what? I'm trying to get into the mood of the next card, because how do you pronounce Menominom?
I think it's... Can I see it again? Hold
yeah,
on.
Check
I think
it out.
It's pronounced Menon.
Do, 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 do.
I think, because it's Menon. Menon. MM'MENON. Menon. The right hand.
Is
what this
yeah.
is. Urza in space.
Man, we need to watch a little bit more Bleach, and then there's a really cool altar that you can get
okay.
for this guy. Cool. Yeah. But this is a 3 and 2 blue, 3/4 flying legendary jellyfish advisor that says you may look at the top card of your library at any time. You may cast artifact spells from the top of your library, and artifacts you control have tap, add blue, spend this mana only to cast spells from anywhere other than your hand.
So this podcast is coming up before the gameplay airs, which I think is going to be the game that I made a decent amount of actions playing this deck.
It's pretty cool.
I don't know that it'll stick around. What it feels like is kind of like Urza, and also kind of like the reality shift, the reality key.
What's
the other? It's another jellyfish.
It's another jellyfish, weirdly enough.
Is it called the reality something? Reality chip?
The reality chip, that's what it is.
Feels kind of like that. It didn't do a ton until it did, is how it felt to me. I thought that it could act as some card advantage. It really didn't until I was able to get Sensei's Divining Top going. And then it started to become a lot better. And then I got the Golem that whenever an artifact comes in, it untaps itself.
Battered Golem. Classic Magda card.
Yeah, Battered Golem. Now all of a sudden, it works with Sensei's Top really well. So like, there are a lot of good synergies that you can do with this card. I think it works really well in what I think is a really good strategy right now, which is the one ring, untapping the one ring hundreds of times. That's a good strategy, and I think that mono blue artifacts is a great way to do that, and I think this is a commander that can help facilitate a strategy like that. I don't know if it's better than Urza. I don't know if it's better than other options that we already have, but it does the job enough, I think.
The deck was kind of like a combination between Urza and like the Curie deck that we saw on the
channel a little while ago,
where like your win condition is like kind of in the command zone, but you need something else to do
yes.
to still win the game. So like the list is jam-packed with other ways to make like infinite mana and like a walking ballista or like something else that you can do to actually finish the table off.
We should say an artifact reducer, like that makes your things cost one less, and a sense plays Divinatop and Menominom in play is draw your whole deck. Because
that's
you can
true.
Tap Sensei Divinatop to put it on top, and then since it costs one less, you can cast it from the top of your library with Menominom to play it into play, and then do that effect over and over again. And you can draw your deck, and then after you draw your deck, then you can do whatever.
Walking Ballista, something like that.
Yeah, whatever, however you think is the best way to win the game that takes up the least amount of slots at that point. But that's the main goal with this deck.
Yeah, exactly. And I saw some other builds while I was trying to put this together that like also were just trying to put as many one and zero drop artifacts into the deck as possible so that when you get Menominom in play, you're just spinning into every other card of your deck, which I thought might be a little more like a bracket four thing.
Yeah.
Those decks historically have been very bad in CEDH.
Right. I do think that the deck that we played, it could have used some other ways to alter the top of the library. It felt like there were a couple of situations where like there was an artifact, but then I could re-switch some things around, and then now there was an artifact, and now that's another card that I can play. I think going forward, if I were to keep working on the deck, more top of library stuff. Like not a ton, you know what I mean? But like maybe Brainstorm. I might consider Brainstorm. I know I was looking for something like Dramatic Reversal throughout the game, so I might put Dramatic Reversal into a deck like that just because it's good with the One Ring and it's good with artifacts and shit like that. Like, I went to Mystical Tutor for something and, like, I didn't want a counterspell. So, like, I don't know. You know, there were situations like that. It's hard to say that, like you said, like, I don't know if this is better than Urza. I don't know if this is better than another strategy that does something similar, but it does kind of have its own little, like, Demonic Consultation Thassa's Oracle with Sensei's Divinatop and a 2-mana artifact reducer. That's just 3 mana plus your 5-mana commander to win the game. Sort of. It'll feel cool. And in a blue artifact deck, you have a billion ways to search for artifacts.
And especially when you only need a 1-mana artifact, that also adds a lot more ways to find it then too.
Right. And the top is just like good in the deck even without the reducer. It makes it so that 1 mana is draw a card more or less.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
So I think this deck is, I don't know that it's going to be a CDH deck, so I think I'm going to give it like a 2.8, but I think it's like a close strategy.
Yeah, I think that's around the same thing that I'll give it. So I'll give it a 2.8 too.
2.8.
Yeah. Because it's still
2.82 you're giving it?
2.82, yeah.
So 2. It's 8. A 2.81 rounded
2.8,
out.
Yeah. This is like a tried and true thing that you can do in CEDH, but the strategy of mono blue artifacts in this way is a little bit outdated, so it's going to be a little bit tougher to find windows and wins than I think a lot of the more modern decks that we're used to.
I do wonder, I played a little bit of Heliod recently, I do wonder if that would be a strategy that could do the artifact thing a little bit better, but that's kind of pretty distant from the Sensei's Divining Top thing. Just the Heliod making things cheaper is pretty good, but I mean, that's getting off. What's the next card we're talking about today?
Our next card is Starfield Vocalist. This is 3 and a blue for a 3/4 human bard that says if a permanent entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control the trigger, that ability triggers an additional time, but you can warp it for 1 and a blue, which is why we're considering it today.
It triggers an additional time, not double the amount of times, right?
Correct.
Additional time, but it's any time a permanent of yours triggers.
So, like, if I spun into this off of Atali,
oh my god,
then every other Atali that enters gets me 2 Atali triggers.
But so it's specifically like not off of something like a cast trigger, like the Eldrazi that searches for a land.
Oh, sowing Mycospawn.
Sowing Mycospawn. The permanent would have to be in play for it to trigger, yes?
Correct, yeah. So any of those other cast triggers.
Those don't work.
They don't work.
But any enters the battlefield triggers, those will get doubled by this. If something else causes and enters the battlefield trigger, that'll be good. I don't know. This is something that we don't often see again, but 2 mana for this effect is kind of something that we haven't seen before. So there might be some combos that I'm not aware of that are enabled by something like this. There might just be an insane amount of value you can get.
Yeah. Now that Dockside's not in the format, these kind of effects I know people are looking to a lot less. And unless your commander is like Atali, maybe Atraxa. Maybe is this an Atraxa card? But like Atraxa doesn't have ways to cheat out Atraxa the same way that Atali has ways to cheat out Atali to make it worth like putting a little bit of extra mana up front into your commander.
I wonder if like any of the Gaia's Cradle Spellseeker decks want something like this, where you can double your Spellseeker and then you can probably get like a Snap and one of the creature tutors or something.
That's
like
true.
That.
It's basically Anala then, right?
Like it
two
turns
mana
your, yeah.
Instead of having to pay 1 mana for each of your Anala triggers, you pay the 2 mana up front and then you can like go through whatever loop you want without having to play Anala in the command zone. You can just play something else.
My only fear is like it's still a do nothing on its own. Like by itself, it doesn't do anything. So it has the same problem that these effects have always had in CDH. But because this one can get into play for 2 mana, I am thinking about it.
But I don't know what deck to put it in quite yet. So I'm going to give it a 1.5.
1.5 sounds great. 1.5 sounds good.
That sounds good. Here is another card. This is... That was a hell of an introduction for this one. This is Uthros Research Craft. This is 2 and a blue for an artifact spacecraft that has station, which means that you can tap another creature you control to put charge counters on it equal to its power onto the spacecraft. Then you can only station as a sorcery, but it becomes an artifact creature at 12 plus counters. If there's three or more counters on it, then whenever you cast an artifact spell, you get to draw a card and put a charge counter on this spacecraft.
That right there, I think, is what makes this card considerable. Just that line of text.
There's another line that says that when it's a creature, it gets flying and then +1/+0 for each artifact you control, and it's an 08. But who gives a shit about that?
I think who gives a shit about that, yeah.
I think this is like a Manamanam card, or it's like an Urza card. Any deck that's going to be actively casting a lot of things. I think Urza and Manamanam in particular, because they can crew this thing or station it right away. Give it the ability so that it can get turned on.
So it's basically a 3 mana for an effect that says whenever you cast an artifact, draw a card.
Exactly.
If you can turn on right away, which within the right deck with the right commander, I think you'll be able to.
Urza can, because the Karnstruct just taps.
That's insane. That's like really. It's easy to cast. It's blue and two.
Yeah, it's like Rhystic Study. Just getting down Rhystic Study.
It's like a Rhystic Study, but for yourself that you get to control in the right deck. Now you have to be in that all artifact strategy,
dude. But like Joyra, like where the
holy
where
shit,
just
when now
doubles,
you're doubling that,
because again, Joyra is 3 power, so you can just turn it on right away.
Oh, yeah, Joyra is 3 power, yeah.
And casting it also gets you a draw off of Joyra as well. Yep. I feel like this is amazing for that deck. But like, weirdly, there's going to be other blue based artifact decks that don't want this at the same time, though. So like, it's going to have pretty niche homes, but I think it's going to end up being like, three almost. Because
I think
it's
three.
Strong.
I think
like it's
in
not
the right
like,
deck. Yeah, it'll be strong.
It's not like it's just only going in like one type of deck, one like blue based artifact decks with big creatures that have power to crew it, or 3 power to crew it in particular. But like it's a really strong effect for those decks, I think. So I think three's.
What's the name of it
grade.
Again?
It's called Uthros's Research Craft. Uthros Research Craft.
I'm kind of with you. I think it's a solid 3. I think this is a good card. I think this effect is powerful. What's the Jeskai one that is a 4 mana enchantment that whenever you cast a spell, draw a card?
We talk about this card a lot.
We talk
about
this card a lot.
We never know what it is.
Because it's...
Whirlwind
of Thought. Sure. I don't think that's it. But it feels so close to good, because when you get it going, holy shit, is it incredible? But...
Yeah.
It's like fucking really all the pips, 4 mana is a lot.
But this is like easy to get out on turn 2.
But yeah, this one feels like in the right deck, this is going to be really powerful. So I like it out of 3.
That sounds good. Let's talk about some red cards now. Sir.
Finally.
This next card is Devastating Onslaught. This is XX and red for a sorcery that says create X tokens that are copies of target artifact or creature you control. Those tokens gain haste until end of turn, and you sacrifice them at the beginning of the next end step.
Is this an Atali card?
Veterans of the show will recognize the wording on this card.
Yeah, this makes Atali copies. This makes a bunch of Atali copies.
In theory, yeah. So I've been thinking about this card a lot, and I know there's a lot of Atali players that are excited about it, but I think there's an equal number of Atali players that are also not very excited about this card, because when you spin into it with Atali, it does not copy Atali. X is 0 when you spin into things that have a CMC of X. I feel like I'm crouched a lot. Damn. X is 0 when you spin into things with a CMC of X. So this ends up having 0 targets when you cascade into it with your Atali.
I think that's the worst part about this card, obviously. That's like the one thing that's kind of holding it back. You can theoretically make a bunch of Atalis if you have a bunch of mana. But also, what's Twin Flame can do that if you strive it or something?
Well, Twin Flame has to have separate targets if you strive it, right?
Okay,
so I can't I
can't
strive it and then also have it like copy Atali. But at the same time, like what I've been trying to think about it is like Rionya.
Yeah.
Because like what this would look like is at X equals 1 is a 3 mana Heat Shimmer, which is like a baseline copy of Atali from your hand specifically. Yeah. And at X equals 2.
So 5 total mana.
I have to think about that as like a Rionya, where I went Seething Song into Rionya, which means that I've cast 1 instant or sorcery, which would mean that Rionya makes 2 Atalis, which is what this would do as well. It would make me 2 copies of Atali at 5 mana, which is still in a pretty good rate.
For rate, it's good. It's weird because it being the X ability on rate, for 3 and for 5 mana, it's on rate. But the fact that when you flip into it, it's nothing is really bad. And Atali, like, not that it can't afford, but it really does not want to miss on hits. You know what I mean? It wants to hit as much as possible.
I don't play Invasion of Ikoria and Finale of Devastation, even though they can get me like slightly cheaper Atalis by finding Treasonous Ogre, yeah. Which is something I actively want to do. Like, flipping into it is so detrimental when I don't have a good way to like manipulate my deck so that I'm guaranteed to hit Atali copiers all the time, right? And if this is going to be a dead card, I don't think that I'm going to be trying it out in my personal Atali list.
But I don't fault Atali pilots for wanting to try it. I just, when you miss, it's going to feel shitty. But how often are you going to miss on it? I don't know.
I'll miss a lot on it. Because I know what happens is, like, the only times that the clones are good in your hand is when you have extra mana after your Atali. And half of the time, that can only happen when you have Treasonous Ogre out already.
Well, you're already in Christmas Land, sort of.
Exactly, yeah. Right? And at that point, with Treasonous Ogre, you don't have the life normally to make two more Atalis by having X equals B2. And I think if you have Roaming Throne in play and could make four Atalis, basically, with X equals two, I think just, like, any old Twin Flame at three mana is still just better, I think.
Yeah, and Atali slots are, like, getting kind of tight. Like, there's just not a lot of room for cards that could be bad. Even if they could be good, all of the other cards are basically always good, so it's hard to cut them.
Yeah, exactly. So I think this is going to be a 2.5.
I'm going to trust your judgment on it.
Because this still goes infinite with Dual Caster Mage in any red deck. There are going to be scenarios where maybe you want to make like another copy of the One Ring or something. Like, this does hit artifacts. So, like, at three mana, making another copy of your Portal to Phyrexia or your the One Ring or something to, like, reset your life, the counter, so that you don't die on your next turn or something, while also still being able to, like, use the keys you already have in play to keep going. Like, there's going to be a lot of red artifact builds that I think might really like this too. But I don't know that every Turbo Atali deck's gonna like this, but a more mid-rangey Atali deck's gonna really enjoy this card.
That's fair enough. Yeah, I think I stand by what you said. 2.5 sounds right. It might see play in some decks.
All right, our last red card is Weth Stalker Ardent. This is 2 and a red for a 2/3 Drixt Artificer that says whenever another creature or artifact you control enters, this creature deals 1 damage to each opponent, and you can warp it for just a red.
It's an Obnixilus card.
This is an Obnixilus card, but it's kind of like the best of all the Obnixilus cards, because a lot of them are 2-mana creatures that only trigger off of one of those two things.
Yeah.
Either an artifact being cast or entering, or a creature being cast or entering. And this one does both at 1 mana for the one turn.
How much is it for the other turns?
It's 2 and a red. So it's 3 mana. So it's 3, yeah.
Which is still not unheard of. I have seen Obnixilus players play some 3-mana pingers.
Yeah. Here's what Obnixilus players are going to tell us.
Yeah.
Is that you can't warp from exile. So if you flip into this with Obnixilus, it's a 3-mana permanent version of this effect.
Similar to the Atali issue that we were just talking about. It works with your commander, but also kind of doesn't.
It could be a little bit better. Yeah, there's going to be times you're like, oh, goddamn, I wish this was in my hand or something.
Sounds like another 2.5?
I think it's going to be another 2.5, because I think it could be really good in Obnixilus, but I would not be surprised if that dis-synergy in particular is enough to make them go, like, I find every card in my deck off Obnixilus.
Right.
I don't want to make them more expensive to cast.
That's fair.
Cool. We're going to move into green, and we're going to talk about Horizon Explorer first. This is 2 and a green for a 2/4 Insect Scout that says lands you control enter untapped, and whenever you attack a player, you create a lander token.
First time we're talking about lander tokens?
Lander? This is an artifact with 2 and tap it to sacrifice it to search your library for a basic land to put it onto the battlefield tapped and shuffle. This is a Lumra card.
I think this lands matters strategy is getting slowly but surely stronger in CDH. With Lumra, with the new green-red commander that we're going to talk about later today, the 5-color one that just got printed. The Wandering Minstrel. I think there are some options that will facilitate a land strategy in CDH a little bit more.
They all need a Amulet of Vigor type effect to make sure that the lands that are really good that all come into play tapped come into play untapped. So this is just like another version of that effect at a pretty good mana value.
Great with your Scape Shift effects. Any of the big effects that put a bunch of lands into play tapped, it allows Scape Shift to be kind of closer to a win con a lot of the time because what you're finding and putting into play, stuff like, I'm not even going to begin to say like I know the right ones, but Bounce lands and the 3-mana land, the one that taps for 3 mana that sacrifices 2 lands when it enters, and Lotus Field.
Lotus Field, the Field of the Dead.
Sure, yeah. There's the Talarian one that is a tutor spell when you can bounce it with the Bounce land and then tutor or something
deck,
like that. You know, there's a bunch of broken stuff that you can do with this untap all lands effect when it enters. And the lander thing, probably won't come up a ton, but it might.
I don't think it's actively something that you ever want to be doing, but like it is extra value that
you
can be getting.
Yeah.
Three. It's not nothing. And like a 2-4 is a huge body too.
That's true. Yeah. It's going to be similar to Splunking. If you're already playing Splunking and you're already playing Amulet of Vigor, this is a card that you're thinking about. That's mainly fringe decks at the moment, but I got to imagine Lumra is going to play this, right?
I got to imagine Lumra is going to play this. Yeah. I played this in the deck that we're playing for the channel as well. It just kind of fits in that same land strategy of like, I want to be casting Wilderness Reclamation to get all of the lands from my graveyard out, and I want them to be untapped so that my mirror pool can make another copy of Lumra when it comes back and let me just keep chaining through this loop.
Boom, yeah. So I think this card is going to be good in 1 to 3 decks, but those decks aren't super powerful, but I think they're getting a lot stronger with each set.
They're all the same strategy is the thing, though. Yeah, so I don't know that I want to give it 3 because it's not multiple strategies.
That's true. It's really just the lands deck.
So I think it's a 2.5, I want to say.
I'm going to give it a 2.7.
Ooh, okay.
And round it out to a 2.6.
Yeah, you know, it probably is on the higher end because I think those decks are definitely going to play them. And I think the more land stuff that we get, the more commanders that we're going to get.
It's like the lands decks, at least for my casual AC deck, it is such a, what's the expression? The combination is better than the sum of the parts. That's something. That's almost something.
That's the whole thing. That's
it, but I didn't say it's not the combination. There's another. How do you say that?
Individual is better than
it's a mass thing. It's a, once you get enough
critical mass,
it's a critical mass thing. When you get enough of this, like when you get so much of this effect, it turns into like eventually you have like one land draw. You play one land and just play, and it's like you're making 5 mana off of it and drawing 2 cards. And like once you get enough of these things, it gets way out of hand.
It feels nice that all my creature tutors can like make sure they all go for Sylvan Safekeeper, so I can sacrifice all my lands and I don't have to worry about using a creature tutor on something like this. Because I play like 8 different versions of this in the deck already.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Yeah.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, football fans. Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Let's talk about the next card.
One last green card here before we get into multicolor spells. This is Frenzied Baloth. This is 2 green for a 3/2 beast that has 4 lines of text. This spell can't be countered. It's got trample and haste. Creature spells you control can't be countered, and combat damage can't be prevented.
Yeah, so I think this is a card that's going to see play in some Magic the Gathering formats. I don't know that CDH is the format for that specifically. It looks a little bit like the 2 mana enchantments.
It looks a little bit like Destiny Spinner, yeah.
It looks a little bit like Destiny Spinner.
Some of the words are a little bit different, but the main thing that this one does, besides being uncounterable itself, is that damage can't be prevented, which is big with the One Ring.
Sure.
And it's not that you're always worried about, like, how do I win around the One Ring? But some decks can't really win around the One Ring. So I think that that could be something that's an important piece for, like, decks that really want to push through their commander and not have to play other interaction like Autumn's Veil in their deck.
Sure.
This now kind of kills 2 birds with 1 stone.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you're in mono green, if you're already looking for Dosin, that's the mono green one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the Falling Leaf,
If you're playing Dosin and you're in heavy creatures specifically, I think this card is worth looking at. It's close enough to other cards that we see play. It's a little bit worse in some ways, but a little bit better in other ways. So I think it's probably like realistically like a 2.7 almost. I think this is like almost a CDH card.
Probably. I think there's going to be some Atali players that want it. It's not unheard of that like you have to win the game with your dual caster line. And if someone has One Ring protection, not only did this help make your Atalis uncounterable earlier, but it's also going to help you push through for the win then too.
And then there's obvious stuff like Timna and Gaia's Cradle. It works well with other things that you're you're trying to do in CDH. Sometimes it's just like kind of an efficient attacking creature if you need it to be, and it's also just a creature, which is good right now. I have a bunch of creatures in play.
I mean, I think Destiny Spinner is better in most cases. Like in Itali, Destiny Spinner I think is still better. If making food chain uncounterables nuts.
That's specifically making food chain uncounterables, but Destiny Spinner isn't uncounterable itself.
You can counter the fuck out of a Destiny Spinner.
Whereas you can't counter this.
You can't counter this.
That's going to be relevant. That's going to come up.
That's definitely going to come up.
But it's only going to come up in the decks that are all, the combos are, it's a creature combo. And
when you're really worried about Force of Will in particular.
Like, I'm wondering, like, Yoshimar Thrasios, a deck that I recently put together, I don't think this card goes in there, but, like, I am thinking about it. I'm not positive it doesn't.
I feel like if I have counter spells of my own, I want it less, though.
Yes. You're right. I would rather just, but it's a creature for guys. You're right. I would rather just an extra counter spell. I'm not cutting a counter spell for this. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm cutting something else, and there's no good cuts. So, I don't know. 2.7, I'm sticking to it.
2.7, and now let's talk about some of the rest of the commanders that we played for.
Got it.
This upcoming gameplay
episode.
That
was perfectly said, Cameron.
Oh, it's going to get cut up and be great. Tanuk, Memorial Ensign, is one, a red and a green for a 2/4 for a 2/4 legendary creature Kavu pilot. Now I'm in my head. He's got landfall, and whenever a land you control enters, he deals 1 damage to each opponent, and if this is the second time this ability has resolved this turn, draw a card.
This works with Keen Sense.
This kind of works with Keen Sense. This is what made me really want to play this one on the channel, is that it's worded the same way that Vivi is, except for instead of when you cast a non-creature, it's when a land enters.
Right, yeah, which is a little bit harder to do multiple times.
Exactly, right? Yeah. But whenever a land enters, you deal 1 damage to each opponent, and if you have Keen Sense or your Ophidian Eye, which is actually called Snake Umbra,
okay,
each damage that you deal to each opponent is 1 card, so that's 3 cards you do for each land that comes into play.
Which is great and very powerful.
It seems great and very powerful, which means that, like, if you do this and then play a fetch land, because it's not whenever you play a land, it's whenever a land comes into play. Yeah. So if you play, like, a fetch land, you trigger them once, you draw 3, you crack the fetch land, get your next one, and then it's the second time that it's triggering, so it's actually a draw 4 that time.
Yeah, so 1 fetch land becomes draw 7.
Exactly, which is freaking gnarly.
In a stormy red-green deck, that is going to be very powerful. But with something like a Scape Shift, once you have other untappers and stuff, it's not impossible that you can kind of, like, storm off with this and repeat things coming in and out, repeat the lands going in and out, and, like, probably kill the table that way. If you're drawing so many cards, I think that could be possible.
That's the thing. This whole deck was kind of designed to be like a Gruul Lumra, so it really inspired by, like, some of the other things that the Wandering Minstrel allows you to do now, like Barbarian Ring is something that I can loop through technically too as a way to deal the table damage. But as long as, like, I have my commander out, though, I don't even really need to worry about another win condition. Like, I didn't have to worry about playing the Desert that enters the battlefield that deals a damage, and, like, have to worry about having that to loop through in particular. My commander is already going to be doing that.
Yeah, you certainly, when compared to Lumra, you probably have less dead cards and a higher overall card quality average, but this commander doesn't, it does make from nothing. It gives you a card draw, but you have to have other stuff going. Lumra kind of creates from nothing, which is something we've talked about a little bit, where commanders that can create from nothing, Lumra can have 0 things going on, and when you cast Lumra, you'll still mill 4 cards and potentially get a land, even if you have nothing else in your graveyard already, which normally you do in Lumra. You know what I mean? It works well with what you've got, but also makes from nothing. This does not make from nothing. You must have something else to go along with it. You must have a second land drop, a Keen Sense, a way to go do something with it, but it's a lot cheaper. It's in more colors. It's a higher overall card quality. So I do think it's, like, close to Lumra.
I think it kind of is, yeah. And like Vivi, you don't have good ways to tutor for the good stuff that you want. Yeah. But you can find any deck or any creature in your deck, like, in a moment's notice super easily.
Right,
though.
You have a ton of good green creatures. I think this is probably, like,
I want to give it a 5 just based on how much I love it, but I know that I can't. I feel like I am realistically going to give him a 2 because the Wandering Minstrel exists and is already going to be a better version of this.
I think so.
I think Lumra is already a better version of this, because already Lumra is a better version of the Wandering Minstrel too, in my opinion.
You might be right about that.
I was just watching a CEDH TV video today. I think that Mons has convinced me that Lumra is just the best way to do this. Because being able to put Lumra back in the command zone is something that these other so these other decks can't do that. So you have to play these, like, Scape Shift and Wilderness Reclamations and, like, other things to do in order to make sure that you can get there.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Tali where it's way better in the command zone because the command zone is broken.
This deck goldfished so crazily.
Oh, yeah.
It was so much fun to goldfish this deck. And then when we sat down to play it, I was like,
wait a minute.
Okay.
You were doing so much in the goldfishing because you didn't have anything to do against anyone else in the actual game.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No one else was winning or doing anything.
I think I'm going to give this like a 2.6. You said you're giving it a 2?
I think I might give it a 2.
So
it'll
average out at a 2.3. That 2.6 might be high, but like you, I like the card. I think
it's got a lot of upside. And like if you can get the Keen Sense thing going, like
that's
you
cool.
can't lose that game. And like everything you do just keeps fueling you.
I foresee it as a card that like potentially get better if we get more Keen Sense type of things. If we get more ways to make this into whenever the damage is dealt, you draw a card or something. I think this commander could get a lot better. So
yeah, that's what I'll give it for now. I think I'm going to end up turning it into a casual deck because I think there's a lot of stuff that's going to be fun like that to do in casual. Keen Sensing with this in casual, I think will still be fun and will let me feel like I can play VV in casual without having to play VV.
Yes, same idea, same strategy. Okay, what's our next card?
Our next card is a 5-color card that's called Infinite Guideline Station, which is Wooburg for a legendary artifact spacecraft that when it enters creates a tapped 2/2 colorless robot artifact creature token for each multicolor permanent you control. It has station, of course, and when you station it to 12 charge counters, it becomes a 7/15 with flying, and whenever it attacks, it draws a card for each multicolor permanent you control.
Yeah, so realistically, Tyler played this, he's going to be playing it in our upcoming video. The deck, I think, actually plays a little bit better than it looks.
Because it's a 5-color good stuff deck.
Because it's a 5-color good stuff deck.
Well, I think we decided it was a 5-color okay stuff deck.
Yeah, it's not exactly good stuff. You are playing some mediocre multicolored permanents, but in a dream world, it's not uncommon that this is going to come down for 5 mana, and then on the very next turn, because of the 2/2s that you make and the rest of your cards that you're playing, you'll be able to station it right away, attack someone, and draw like 4 or 5 cards. And that's going to be really good, especially if it sticks around. If you get to do that again, and then next turn you're drawing 6 or 7 cards, and then you get to do that again, and then you're drawing 9 or 10 cards, because you know, when you draw more cards, you're going to be putting out more multicolored permanents. So it's going to snowball pretty quickly.
Especially if you start the game with a Leyline of the Guild Pack.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the name of the card?
That's the name of the card. Yeah, there are some very nutty starts. And a lot of the multicolored cards, stuff like... I'm losing my voice a little bit. A lot of the multicolored cards, stuff like the frog. What's the frog?
Psychic Frog.
Psychic Frog. It draws you cards when you attack. Lotho gets you mana. Kinnan makes your mana more. It's going to feel kind of like a Sisse, where like the multicolored things that you have sort of work with the strategy because it's all just like mana and card advantage.
They're just
right?
really good cards that like are good in all kinds of formats.
Right, yeah. So I think the deck is going to be interesting. Now, it competes with other 5-color things. Is this better than Sisse?
Are the Terra players going to move off of Terra to give this a try? I don't think so.
Right, like realistically, what it does that's unique is it's a card advantage in a 5-color commander. That is unique because we don't have that. All the other 5-color commanders don't offer you card advantage. Sisse offers you combo. Najila offers you combo. What are the other 5-color commanders? Terra offers you combo. None of them offer you card advantage. This is the first one that does.
Kenrith offers you card advantage.
I guess, but in like the shittiest way.
People don't look at Kenrith and go, that's my card advantage commander that I want.
And that was probably a good chunk of why Kenrith saw plays, because it did offer some amount of card advantage. This will do card advantage a decent amount better.
I think what we found, though, is that it's just a little telegraphed and slow and very easily interactable. But when it goes off and you get to draw a good number of cards, you can come back from so many situations.
Sure,
like
yeah.
That.
A bit of a lightning rod where it's going to attract removal in situations that maybe is going to be disadvantaged for the table because now the combo player is going to be able to go through with a removal that's been wasted on the station. But if you don't kill the station, they're going to draw 5 cards, and that's not going to be good either. So it'll put you in shitty situations. I think the card is reasonable. It's hard to say if it's going to be better than anything else we have, but I think I'm going to give it kind of a weirdly high rating because the potential to have a 5-color commander that draws you cards, I think that's really good. So I'm going to give it like a 3.5.
I think that's fair. I think I'm going to go in the other direction as you, though. I think I'm going to give it like a 2.
You think it's that bad?
I think I want to go a little bit lower because it does still seem like it is a little bit... It's a lot to get going. It's not like you can cast it and then it's going to like naturally get you cards. Like you still have to build your entire game plan up to it. And it still feels a little bit too fragile to me. Trying to think about it in like a competitive setting makes it seem like almost completely...
Yeah, like in a tournament.
Unplayable.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's not something I would ever consider bringing to a tournament when there's like an infinite number of other 5-color decks that like you have options for that I think are going to be a little bit better. So
I think Sisse is going to feel better most of the time.
I think I like what it does in that it draws you an insane amount of cards, but I think its tournament pedigree won't be there, which means that its casual CEDH games also, like, it's not going to have a big community there, too. So I think it's going to end up being a 2, even though the ceiling is insanely high.
That's fair. So 3.5 and 2, what's the average of that? 2.7 or something?
Yeah, 2.7. Like 2.7, exactly,
that sounds right. Okay, what's the next card we're talking about?
All right, our next card, then, is the deck that Nate played, which is Kilo Apogee Mind, which is a blue, a red, and a white for a 3/3 legendary artifact robot artificer, who's also a creature. He's got haste, and whenever Kilo becomes tapped, you get to proliferate.
We don't have to spend a lot of time on this one. We played this one mainly for the colors because we didn't find a ton of commanders that seemed like they were actually CDH viable from this set. This is a Jeskai deck, and Jeskai has good colors.
There are a couple of proliferate lines that can get you infinite proliferates. And then that way you can like put infinite +1/+1 counters then on things like Walking Ballista or like Benthic Infiltrator,
sure,
which is one that lets you loot every time a +1/+1 counter goes on it.
The One Ring, if you proliferate the One Ring, you draw more cards.
That's great too, yeah.
Certainly a good Agatha Soul Cauldron type of deck, certainly a good Walking Ballista type of deck. Works with a lot of those Jeskai things that we were talking about earlier with the Starfield Shepherd that can find stuff like things that this deck would want.
Or that thing that says whenever you commit a crime, you get to proliferate too, that that's we really also good. Talked yeah. about today.
It is good for that strategy. I think that strategy is not good.
Why don't they give Jeskai Commander's card advantage, though? Like, this is so not card advantage. If this was whenever it became tapped, draw a card, that would be nuts.
We have Elsha, which is almost card advantage.
I want one that says draw a card when something happens.
We have Narset, which is you get card advantage out of graveyards.
No, I don't want that. I don't have to rely on someone else's deck.
We have Krom and a white commander with partner.
I guess that's true.
Yoshimaru Krom.
Yeah, why don't people play that deck?
That can't be good, is why, I think. But it would make Mox Amber good, and you get to be in Jeskai colors, and you have a Krom, and you have a Yoshimaru, and you get to play the cheap commander stuff. That sounds good. No one plays Dog
And
Krom.
You get to play all of this proliferate stuff so that your Yoshimaru gets bigger?
Huh. Wait, that's not good, right? Why? No, because Yoshimaru is good because Gaia's Cradle. And without...
No, we have to change up why Yoshimaru is good now. And we have to take advantage of the fact that he's cheap and big.
I don't know about the big, but the cheap thing I like...
We'll make him big.
We'll make him big, all right. I like the Deflecting Swat and Fierce Guardianship turned on right away. I think that's always good.
Yeah, I think that's good too.
What else can you do in Jeskai with a commander, though? Jeskai's Will is great.
Yeah.
The tutors, you don't really get any tutors. I guess you get the red ritual, Infernal Plunge.
You get Infernal Plunge, but that's not going to be as good because we're trying to make him big and that will reset him.
Yep, that's true.
Let's brainstorm this deck.
We'll come back to
later.
That one. Yeah. Kilo, I'm going to give a very low rating. I'm going to give a 0.5 to Kilo.
I think I'm going to give a 1 to Kilo.
Okay, so that rounds out a 0.75.
At least you can cast Intuition and then find Underworld Breach.
Which you could also do in Yoshimaru Krom, my new favorite deck.
I can't wait to get this one on the show. Yeah. All right, we got a couple colorless cards to talk about then.
Let's rattle them off.
The Endstone is a 7-mana legendary artifact that says whenever you play a land or cast a spell, you draw a card. And at the beginning of your end step, your life total becomes half of your starting life total rounded up, which could be an upside.
Or it could be like a downside.
Yeah.
When I first read this, I'm like, oh, fuck, you're going to lose like a shitload of life. But then I realized, like, oh, fuck, if you can like stay alive to your turn and like combat damage is what you're afraid of, you can like never die because you'll go to 1 and then go back up to 20 if you're going to game of commander, like the One Ring can pin you for 10 and then you do all your stuff, you lose Ancient Tomb and you go down to 1 and then on your end step you go back up to 20.
I'll bounce my One Ring and reset it. Or even
like go back up to 20 and then next ring time the One Ring deals you for 11 or whatever and then you go down to 9 and the next turn it deals you for 12, but you keep on going up to 20. Then
that's
you're like,
funny.
Then you're prolonging the game. Within CDH that's bad. They're prolonging
you should
the
be
game.
Able to win at that point
right,
then.
Which this card will help you do because every time you do fucking anything you draw a card. That's crazy. 7 mana is nuts. That's way too much. That's so much. In Modern Tron, this sounds good. In CDH, I'm less positive.
We don't have fun ways we want to cheat this out.
Magda is a great way to cheat this out.
Magda is a great way. Yeah, I feel like your mono red artifact decks, there's a couple of cards that you could consider from this set for just like mono red artifacts in general, but I think this one's probably the best one to put into play, and it's still just going to be okay for you,
maybe
I think.
Maybe the Menominom, maybe that could win something like this. If
you know,
I thought
about it, but I ended up not putting
go with
it in.
Yeah, because you wanted me to lose.
Because it was 7 too mana.
Good.
It was
7 mana is a lot.
Yeah.
7 mana is a ton. That's going to be the biggest thing that holds it back. But if you have ways to cheat it, or if you have ways to make a shitload of mana, the effect is nutty powerful. Yeah. Just the draw cards, the gaining life or the losing life, the fact that it could bite you in the ass, and if you play it early, you're going to like lose 15 life or something, that's going
to
suck.
What if you played this in your ad nauseum deck to get yourself back up to 20 life after ad nauseum?
No, that's so terrible because it's 7-mana hit. That's so bad.
I'm going to give it a 2.
I'm optimistic about this card. Weirdly optimistic.
Okay.
Because whenever you do an effect and draw, it's whenever you cast a spell or play a land.
Or play a land. Yeah,
just play a land, not land edges.
It's flubs.
It's flubs. It's play a land.
Whenever you play a land or cast a spell, yeah.
The cast a spell thing in the artifact deck and the Jorastire deck is going to be so insane. But 7 mana, I'm going to give it a 3. What did you give it?
Like, I'm going to give it a 2. Because like, right, Jorah so already in that deck says whenever you cast a spell, draw a card.
Right.
Yeah. And if anything, we're talking about Uthros, the station vehicle already, which does that same thing for that deck, but at 3 mana.
And then the ones that warp for just 2 mana for that turn.
So I think that there's going to be like just a hell of a lot better options than
as
this
a magnitude-er,
for something like that.
It's nice.
As a magnitude-er, it's okay, but then you stop casting spells.
You don't really
want to
cast spells in Magda.
Yeah, you stop playing lands.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't even know that Magda wants it. It's a
I'm going to lower my rating to 2. I'm going to give it a 2. So
the
it evens
Planeswalker Duretti.
Duretti, yes.
That's
Duretti
where
could
this deck
this.
Goes.
Yeah. Duretti. So this is a 2.
Let's talk about a card that goes in way more places.
I think this is probably the card of the set for me.
Yeah, I think so too. Tezzeret, Cruel Captain. We talked about him last week, so we won't spend too much time on him. But this is 3 mana for a legendary Planeswalker Tezzeret. Whenever an artifact you control enters, put a loyalty counter on Tezzeret. You can spend 0 loyalty to untap another artifact or creature. And if it's a creature, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. For -3 loyalty, you can search your library for an artifact with a mana value 1 or less, put it into your hand and reveal it, by the way, and then shuffle.
This is why I was thinking Lion's Eye Diamond earlier. I think
oh,
this one's
okay.
The one
that yeah,
that
makes sense.
Diamond.
And it's -7 is shit. You get an emblem that puts +1/+1 counters on things on combat, but only artifacts, and sometimes they turn into robots if they're not.
It's so weird. The ultimate is so ass and
so
bad.
So ass. Yeah.
But to be fair, good, because the first two abilities are insane. They're so powerful. I think for CDH, the fact that you can untap the One Ring, or sometimes untapping a Bloom Tender is going to be nuts. Fabor Elder or whatever that can make more mana, that's going to be nuts. But the fact that you can also untap the One Ring. You can untap a Grim Monolith. It doesn't really work great with Wishclaw Talisman because Sorcery Speed. But there are a lot of things you can untap. And the fact that it can find Esper Sentinel. It can find Lion's Eye Diamond. It can find Manifold Key. The things that can untap the One Ring. Something else that it works with. It's like a triangle of it. It can go. It can help you make the One Ring better in one way or another way. That'll feel really good. When I played it in the Menominom deck, it felt great. It felt like it was doing everything that I wanted it to do.
I feel like we'll just let that speak for itself when the video comes out.
But I think this card is really good. I think I'm even considering it in something like Rock'Sai. I've been kind of real heavy on the key version of Rock'Sai recently.
Yeah.
And I kind of think, in my mind, there's like two wolves inside of CDH right now, and one's Gaia's Cradle and the other one is the One Ring. I think they're both kind of like really, really good things to be doing in CDH right now. It's kind of where my brain's at, is like, how do I use this one thing as much as possible? Especially because things like Stax Pieces and Curse Totems and shit like that that would normally stop something like this, those aren't really seen in play because they're not very good right now. So in the wake of that, cards that take advantage of it, like the One Ring and Gaia's Cradle, are being really good. So I want more things that make those cards good.
And a lot of decks can do both, too. Like, they get to use both Gaia's Cradle and the One Ring. So, like, a card that can help them, like, use the shit out of both of them.
Yeah.
Well, this has a harder time untapping the...
It doesn't untap the Gaia's Cradle, but it untaps creatures that also make mana, and some creatures...
That let you untap the Gaia's Cradle, too.
Theoretically, yeah. I don't know that there's really a ton of creatures that have a tap ability that untaps
Magus
the Gaia's
of
Cradle.
The Candelabra.
Boom. There we go.
It finds it and lets you get, like, so many Cradle activations then.
Yeah, it doesn't find it because it only finds artifacts.
What a bummer. All right, this card's only a 4,
but
I think.
But the Star Angel from before, it could find Magus of the Candelabra also.
Yes.
I'm going to give this... What did you give Tezzeret?
I think I'm going to give Tezzy a 4.
I'm going to give it a 4.2.
I think there's going to be less decks that want him that will end up trying him out. I know I talked about last week, in theory, like, I can play him in Atali. I can go find Mana Vault. I can go find LED. I can use it to untap my Mana Vault. It will just make me so much mana, but I think it's just going to be a little bit too slow for how fast I want to go in Atali.
And also, like, what about, like, imagine a situation for me. You go Command Tower, Mana Vault, cast Tezzeret off of the Mana Vault because he's only 3 generic mana. And then immediately you untap the Mana Vault with the Tezzeret that you just cast, tap Mana Vault again to play
Arcane Signet into Poliwag Prodigy.
Arcane Signet.
That sounds nutty.
Yeah, and then you pass a turn. And then next turn, you have already gotten 6 mana out of your Mana Vault, and your Tezzeret, who has came out on first turn, it has not been attacked yet. So on second turn, you can untap your Mana Vault again and extract 9 total mana out of that one card. 2 cards, kind of.
Actually, 12, because you'll get to untap it again that same turn, too.
No, it was 3, 6, and then next turn you untap it.
And then...
tap it, so 6.
Oh, because Mana Vault doesn't untap
step. The fact that you can cast it off of a Mana Vault, the fact that you can cast it off of Sol Ring and Lotus Petal because it's the generic mana, is super easy to cast, that's going to be relevant. The fact that you can cast it off of extra Gaia's Cradle mana and then go find whatever artifact that you want to add to your repertoire or whatever, that's going to be really good, I think. So, yeah, I think this card's really good. I'm going to give it a 4.2. You gave it a 4, so average out a 4.1.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the best card in the set. And the last cards we're going to talk about are all of the station lands. We'll go through these one at a time real quick.
They all do the same thing of they are a land that comes in tapped, and they for a mana of the color and... Well, just say what they are, actually, because they're not all exactly the same.
But they all get turned on when they're stationed for 12.
Stationed for 12. That's the big thing.
Yeah. So the red one is Kaveron Memorial World. Obviously, this one will tap for red. And then for one and a red, you can sacrifice a land to create a 2/2 colorless robot artifact creature token. Then creatures you control get +1/+0 and gain haste until end of turn. Again, once it's fully stationed. This is only here because it can station. Like, it's basically another version of Clown Car in Magda because it's a free, actually now uncounterable way to start tapping your dwarves at sorcery speed this time now. So it's a little bit less flexible, but it's still nice that you don't have to spend any mana into this, and it's just going to get you immediate treasures and value out of it right away.
This is what we defined as a 2, right? Or is it a 3? That it goes in specifically one deck. Like we said, a dwarf, one mana dwarf is a 2 in Magda because it goes in one deck. It's really good in that one deck, and that's all.
I think this time this is a 2.
So this is
a 2. Because it just goes in one deck.
It goes in one deck for one purpose, but it's going to be really good in that one deck.
I think this is a really strong Magda card. Yeah.
Well, I guess it doesn't have to be a 2.0. It's a 2. So we can give it like a 2.8 here.
Because it's going to be...
Because it's so good in that one deck.
Oh, I guess.
Because it's got to be... I got to imagine this is a staple in Magda. Just the fact that it is an uncounterable way to come in and have your dwarves be tapped,
good
right?
Good point. I'll give it a 2.9.
2.85 is what it'll get then.
That sounds good. All right.
Yeah, but just for that reason. Just it's not for good that anywhere reason, else. Yeah. It just allows you to, with Magda, tap your dwarves, which will give you treasures right away. That's good.
It's that good in Magda, yeah. Here's one I don't think is that good. Adagio, Windswept Bastion.
This is the white one?
This is the white one, yeah. So it taps for white, enters tapped, and after it's completely stationed for 3 and a white, you can create a token that's a copy of target artifact or enchantment you control, except it's legendary, activated only as a sorcery.
This has got to be a 0, right? I don't, like, there are, yes, copying shit is, like, really good. Like, having clones is really powerful.
Especially to copy... The One Ring or yeah, the...
I guess, but like, I want to untap
Rhystic Study.
I want to untap the One Ring more than I want to copy it.
Rhystic Study is what I should have said. Like, making a second Rhystic Study for yourself is really where this is good, but you have to have it fully stationed first. I think I wouldn't be surprised if this one's a 0.
I'm going to give it a 0.5 because I, you know, maybe, but I don't think this is not good.
All right.
This is good.
Then that comes out to a 0.25.
So sure, you're sticking with the 0? Yeah. Giving a 0?
Yeah,
I'm giving a 0 this shit. I think it's bad.
Evendo Waking Haven is one that we talked about last week, although I called it Waking Heaven.
Okay.
So this time I'm going to call it Walking Haven.
Nice. Very good.
This is the green one that taps for green, and then for a green and tapping it, you can Gaia's Cradle if it's completely turned on.
Well, Gaia's Cradle, but it's for a... You mentioned this.
That's why I said it's a green and tapping green it okay, to yeah. Gaia's
to
Cradle.
To Gaia's Cradle. This is maybe. We talked about this one a bunch. I think in... Thrasios Gaia's Cradle decks with either Rograk or Yoshimaru, this card is considerable. I think it's obviously much worse than Gaia's Cradle and much worse than even the other enchantment one.
Roaring Rites of Idlamok.
I think it's much worse than that one as well. It comes in tapped, so you have to have an untapper right away. And then also you have to station, so you have to have a bunch of creatures right away. You're an Earthcraft deck, so you do have a bunch of creatures, but a lot of times they're small. It's going to be hard to turn this on right away, but it's another Gaia's Cradle, and Gaia's Cradle is so good right now. I truly don't know where to rate this. I don't think it's going to be an all-star, but I do think it's worth looking at, so I'm going to give it a 2.5.
I think I'm going to give it a 2.1 because I do think that it is worth testing, but I definitely am leaning towards this card's not going to see play in the long term in CEDH. I think the station's just not going to be worth it. You're going to have too many other things that you want to do with your creatures. Even just like leave them up as blockers is a better option than stationing a lot.
But mono green decks, I think like Silvala, can look at something like this a little bit more because you're already playing a bunch of creatures with huge power anyway that you just want them to be in play for Silvala, and then you can tap them to station this right away, and then... Maybe we're talking, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, I think it will have a couple of small homes like that, but not very many. Much like the next one, Sasar Secundi Void Altar. This is the black one that taps for a black, enters tapped, and once it's fully stationed for one and a black, you can tap it and pay 2 life and sacrifice a creature to draw cards equal to the sacrificed creature's power at sorcery speed.
How much mana is it to do again?
This is one and a black.
One and a black.
Once
okay.
It's fully stationed. So the only deck this sees play in is Yargle and Multani.
Sure, yeah.
Because Yargle and Multani stations it fully, and then you can draw 18 with this land for 3 mana, basically.
I do think this is a card that I'm going to play in my casual mono black Vilas deck.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
I think it'll be fine there. I think overall, yeah. I mean, the draw power potential is huge. To draw that, like, it could draw 18 cards off of a land. That's insane.
That's wild.
Yargle Multani is not a good deck. There's not a lot of decks that want to sacrifice their commander. I mean, maybe if you're playing Dargo, maybe this is a Mardu Dargo card. Dargo can station it pretty with the help of other things. You still need 5 power.
Yeah.
Maybe a Dargo deck could play something like this.
Because you sacrifice Dargo, it comes back in, and then you get to station it again to turn it on, and then now it's your next sacrifice?
Sure, yeah. You station it to give it 7, sacrifice it to another effect, bring it, cast it again, station it to make it up, sacrifice it to draw 7 cards. That'll feel good.
That will feel pretty good, yeah, if you can get that going.
Is it better than the green one? I don't think so.
I think it's going to be way easier to abuse the green one. I think it's going to be way easier for more decks to take advantage of the green one. I think the black one's going to take too many resources and a color.
Oh, you think the green one's better?
Yeah.
So then it's worse than a 2.3 then.
The black one's worse than a 2.3, yeah. I think the black one is a solid 1.5.
1.5 for the black one. It's a little bit strange to give the red one a higher rating than the green one, but I truly think the red one's going to end up seeing more play, and the green one might end up not seeing play, whereas the red one will.
I think there's a chance that the green one sees zero CEDH play in the year 2026.
What's the...
The
blue one.
The last card we're going to talk about today, Uthros Titanic God Core. This is the blue one, and once it's fully turned on, for a blue and tapping it, you can add blue for each artifact you control.
This is Urza's...
Talarian Academy,
sure.
Is what this card is, except it's like what they did with Gaia's Cradle. They made it a little bit worse by making you put a blue mana into it.
And you have to station. Maybe Urza can make a big construct, and we'll be able to station this quickly.
I think that's the best home for it, because a lot of the other artifact decks can station the Uthros Research Craft.
Yeah.
They can get to 3 pretty easily, but they're going to have a way harder time justifying putting a tap land in their deck when they're going to have a hard time stationing it to 12.
Yeah, I mean, it does something that we want. It makes a ton of mana for and rewards you for doing something that is also already good, which is like dumping shit onto the board, which is powerful. But it's hard to judge right now if like this is actually going to be doable in CDH or if this is just going to be another tapped blue land that is always a tapped blue land and that's all it is. And 1 out of 100 times it's insane and the other 99 times it's terrible. Like this would have to be able to make the mana... Basically, I would say over 75% of the time, you have to consistently be able to do this. If it's less than 75% of the time, that's just not reliable enough as a slot for me, right?
Which I think if you're in a Staxy version of Urza, like while you have your Winter Moon, your, what's the name of that
Winter
card?
Orb and
Winter
Static Orb.
Winter Orb stuff going on. Like you can pretty easily like keep the rest of the table slowed down to give you the time to go construct into this, next turn construct into this. Now it's turned on.
I think it'll be a nice help, even though like with high tide strategies, normally they want all islands, but they want to be using things that untap their lands a whole bunch. Where if you can have one of your lands, even though it's not an island, what if it taps for 5 or 6? Then that's going to really help with your whole strategy,
all
right?
All of those like untap effects that Yoshi Maru Thrasios is playing are all blue cards, like Cloud of Fairy, Snap, Frantic Search, like there's so even like Peregrine Drake if we need
to. Yeah, so if you can get it turned on and you're playing a whole bunch of untappers and stuff like that,
there's a reason why Academy's banned.
I could see it be very powerful, but it's only going to be in very specific decks that are specifically built towards it, I feel like, right? Like not just every deck.
Academy's banned because it can make 4
right
mana
for
on
nothing,
turn one
for no for it's yeah, yeah isn't yeah.
Gaia's Cradle can't even do that.
I think this blue one is better than the black one, worse than the green one. 2.1, I'll give it.
Oh, I was going to say better than the green one because I think that Urza could play this card. I think a lot of the green decks will dump Avendo.
Yeah, well, but Urza's mono blue. Mono green deck will play the green one.
Mono blue's better than mono green.
That's true.
2.4 is what I'm going to give it.
Which averages out between a 2.1 and a 2.4. Is it
2.25? Damn, turns out you were right. It is worse than the green one.
Any other cards that we're talking about?
No, I don't have any on the list.
That's it, right?
Yeah.
These are all the cards that we thought were reasonable from this set for CDH. We probably missed some. If we did, please let us know. But just know if we didn't include it, it's because we think the card sucks. Should we talk about what the best cards are from this set?
Yeah, let's go over. What are like some of the highlights?
From the top.
Yeah.
The best one is Tezzeret at a 4.1. It's the best card of the set. I'm starting in that order because it's easiest for me to figure out which one's the best one. After that, a 3 was given to... Uthros Reslikcraft? Is that the 5-mana one?
No, that's the 3-mana station.
That draws a card whenever an artifact comes into play.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's the second best card from the set.
A 3 was the second best rating that we gave, yeah. After that is the red station land. We gave that one a 2.85. That was the third best card in the set. Really?
Wow, oh my God.
And then for a tie, we have several 2.7s. We have Starfield Shepherd at a 2.7. That's the tutor for a 1-drop. And we had the Baloth, the green Baloth.
Oh, okay, yeah.
At a 2.7. And we had, this is the Guardian Station, the 5-mana commander that draws cards. That's a 2.7.
Ooh, okay. So that's the top 5 right there, and then? That,
yeah, so there's a several-way tie for the 2.7 stuff.
Okay,
for
yeah.
The fifth one. Yeah. So those are the best cards that we call, that we think are good from this set in CDH.
I stand by it.
It's a perfect list.
I'm sad about the list, but I stand by it.
Thanks so much for watching. If you like Sports Directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Dan Nandez, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Mr. Jerby, The Cardboard Cookbook, Penguinman 0089, Eli the Magic Guy, David Newman, Pat Fire, Spengler, Demetrius Clark, Larson E. Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, S.E. Phillip, Oldie Groupie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean of the Ice, Gerber Garrett, Mace the Ace, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Peter Swear, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Quaje, Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby G Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, I turn the camera off over there because it was about to die. Playtowinmtg.com.
And check us out on the Dragon Shield website if you want to get any of the Play to Win sleeves. Use our affiliate link in the description below.
Thanks for watching.
See you next time. Z-Trep, Hunter the Warlock, Major Tom, John Koba, The Gaming Kinkajou, Dan the Man, Sarcastic, Roy Turner, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Dalton Poteet, Justin, Man Solo, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson. That's not the right one.
Oh, it's a little sharpie. I need a bigger one.
Oh, yeah. We want it big. We're in space. We need it big.
Jill didn't like that joke.
No, she didn't. I should have said, we're edging. We need it big. That would have been the more appropriate use of the set name.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.